Whether you drive a car, need a car, or just occasionally bum a ride with friends, you've come to the right place.
Join the editors of Consumer Guide Automotive as they break down everything that's going on in the auto world.
New car reviews,
shopping tips,
driving green,
electric cars,
classic cars,
and plenty of great guests.
This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
Here's your host, Tom Appel.
All right, this is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast, and I am Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. Thanks for joining us this week. Hey, when you get a chance, visit us at consumerguide.com. While you're there, be sure to check out our 2021 Best Buy Picks. This list is an excellent starting place if you are looking for a new car or crossover. You will also want to check out our blog for complete reviews of all the vehicles we're driving here at Consumer Guide, plus all sorts of fun other stuff. And if you've missed an episode or two of the podcast, you can stream back episodes right there on our homepage. If you have questions for any of us, drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com. That is carstuff@consumerguide.com. All right, let's see who is online with us today. She is the managing editor of Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk and the driving force behind the Drive She Said blog. She is Jill Simonillo. Jill, how's it going?
It is going well. How are you doing on this fine day?
I'm good. Really.
you. Really, I was gonna say you don't sound confident.
In traffic this morning.
Okay.
But other than that, I'm good.
But other than that, I was gonna say because you're not sounding confident about feeling good.
Yeah, I'm all right.
Okay, so it's not good. It's just all right.
Here's the thing. Before we started the show, this is a little inside baseball. It's you and Damon that did all the coughing. That's what I'm saying.
Well, you know, I can't help it if somebody below me decided to set off smoke alarms. So,
well, that's a thing. I don't think we want to go into too much detail about the fact that your residence is on fire, but you may have to leave at some point during the show.
Perils of working from home.
Yeah, if you hear sirens in the background, I swear everything's okay.
I have hamster escapes. Jill has fire problems.
I would like to think that, and this is the nostalgia buff in me, that someone left the Jiffy Pop on the burner for too long.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
All right. He's the senior editor here at Consumer Guide. He is president emeritus
of the Midwest Automotive. Yes.
Welcome, yes. Damon Bell.
Thank you. Yes, you had to change the intro because as of this week, I have handed off the reins to the Midwest Automotive Media Association to Harvey Briggs, who's been a guest on our podcast a couple times. So I am officially in the president emeritus role right now and past president coming up. So
woohoo!
I now join your...
Welcome to the club.
Secret society. Is there like a sport code I get or something? Is there some sort of...
There's a handshake, but I don't know handshake. That we can share that with you just yet.
Oh.
You might need to be like a full-on past president before you get the handshake.
Okay. All right. I look forward to that.
Right now you just get the password.
Damon, I did want to ask you about the perks and sweet, sweet pension of being a past president of the Midwest Automotive Media Association.
Uh-huh.
That's what I'm asking.
Oh, I don't believe there is. If there is, I haven't been informed.
Yeah, because we kind of missed out on those. So if there are any, let us know.
I think I will get some sort of crystal memento, and I'm looking forward to having the name badge, the most coveted name badge that says past president.
Actually, you'll get the president emeritus badge, which is not quite as coveted as the past president badge, which I'm going to get hopefully soon.
Okay.
All right. Hey, kids, after the first break, we chat with Jonathan Bueller, Nissan's communication director for sports cars and sedans. We're going to be talking about the legendary Z car and whatever else is on Jonathan's mind. You don't want to miss this conversation, but there was some automotive news this week, Damon. Apparently, NACTOY, the North American Car of the Year jury, has made its decisions for 2021. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, they announced the winners of their North American Car, Truck, and Utility Vehicle of the Year awards for 2021. That was just this past week. We'll just go ahead and list off what they are. The finalist for the car category was the Genesis G80, the Hyundai Elantra, and the Nissan Sentra. And of those, the Hyundai Elantra was the winner.
Okay.
The truck finalists were the Ford F-150, the Jeep Gladiator Mojave, and the Ram 1500 TRX. Both the Jeep and the Ram we've talked about, had interviewed guests on previous editions of the show to talk about those. And actually a Ford F-150 as well. We've talked about all of these. So the winner in that truck category was the Ford F-150. And then finally, the utility vehicle category, the candidates or the finalists were the Ford Mustang Mach-E, the Genesis GV80, and the Land Rover Defender. And the winner in that category was the Ford Mustang Mach-E. And Tom, you and I were discussing that I believe that is only the second pure electric vehicle to win the NACODI award, the first being the Chevrolet Bolt in 2017.
Tesla won it at one point, the Model S. So that
really?
Would make it the third. Yeah, because I remember, I distinctly remember, let me say, I'm pretty sure it was there, not the Motor Trend of the Year award or whatever, because I remember having a huge knockdown, dragout fight on Twitter about the fact that the Model S was completely like the wrong vehicle to award for that year. And again, this could be the Motor Trend. I may be mixing that up, but I remember having a fight because at the time, because this is like 10 years ago, I mean, if Tesla's been around that long, but it was when Tesla first came out, and I was like, this is, like, it's not a practical car to have win because only like 1% of the population could own it. But at any rate, I know Tesla won something. Maybe it wasn't NACTOY. Now I'm like second guessing myself.
It was not.
Okay.
I have the NACTOY.
You have the list?
Winners page up in front.
Okay.
Yes.
The NACTOY was smarter than whoever it was that gave that award out.
Yeah.
So the second one. That's interesting.
Yeah.
So let's look at this little bit, and I think we can knock one of these categories out pretty quickly in our conversation. The pickup truck award was almost silly because the Ford F-150 is almost an all-new vehicle, and it really does advance the science of the pickup truck. It's mm-hmm. a very impressive vehicle. The Ram TRX, impressive as it is just kind of a sports car version of a pickup truck. It's also a trim level, so it doesn't really do that much. Additionally, the Gladiator Mojave, very much like the TRX, actually, in intention, in that it's sort of a desert runner vehicle and not really going to do that much for the average consumer. So that one was easy. F-150, yeah. Pretty cool. I'm looking forward to get one through the office. I think, Damon, the real interesting category here to me is the car.
Yeah.
We have a category that's being abandoned, really, by most manufacturers. And here's Hyundai doubling down on this and then scoring big with a NACTOY award for the Elantra.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, that the Elantra and Sentra are direct competitors in that compact car category.
Yeah.
The Sentra is certainly a very nice new vehicle, a great redesign, but I think the jurors, the NACODI jurors, not surprisingly, were attracted by, as we talked about, that Hyundai Elantra, the 2021 redesigned Hyundai Elantra, is really an all-in vehicle. Mm-hmm. They have launched with a full model lineup, high-performance version, hybrid version. So, yeah, it really does signify a complete commitment to a category which is not as dominant as it used to be, and that's probably the main thing that got them the award.
Have you guys driven the Elantra yet?
We've got it coming very soon. Actually, we've got all of these winners coming into our fleet very soon, and we're definitely looking forward to driving all of them.
Because I loved the Elantra. And I mean, the Sentra and the G80, I mean, they both have a lot to recommend themselves, but the Elantra is affordable. It is a very good compact car. It has a lot of nice up-level features. It still has a manual transmission available in the N line, and it hits all of the, or I guess ticks all the boxes, I guess you could say, in terms of what you could possibly want in a car today, including like standard safety technology and everything. So I can see why they picked it as a winner. It's a great car and it drives really well.
There is an interesting point about that. Consumers buy one car. They don't buy a model lineup. So it is, Elantra is impressive because, as to Damon's point, they did go all in. There's sporty versions and hybrid versions and conventional versions. But the Sentra is a fine car. It makes great use of space. It's a really strong dollar value, but it is limited. There's not that much going on there. There's one engine. There is two transmissions, I think, in the base model. You can still get a manual. But there's an awful lot of safety equipment standard too, which is kind of a deal.
Yeah. Sentra, like a lot of Nissan products these days, a very strong value play.
Yeah.
A lot of features for the money. And yeah, we should at least touch on the G80. That is and interesting to see that there are two Genesis vehicles on the finalist list this year. Genesis, of course, being the recently launched luxury division of Hyundai. And it's a pretty impressive showing for an upstart, brand.
Yeah, actually it is. I had not considered that they were double represented this year.
Yeah. And the G80 also, premium full-size car is very much a shrinking category too, but another value entry into that segment with the G80.
Yeah, and I get it too. The G80, we just had one through the office, and it's an impressive vehicle, especially for the money. And you say that a lot about Genesis products because they're not priced like Audi, BMW, or Mercedes products, and that's a good thing because those cars are overpriced. But an impressive vehicle generally, it just doesn't really move the bar forward in the class where the Elantra seems to. And I'm really looking forward to spending time with that. So in the last category, the utility category, we should talk about this a little bit because, as you'd mentioned, Genesis is there with the GV80. The
Land Rover Range Rover.
Land Rover's there with the Defender, which not going to win a lot of awards, I think, in a general category because it's so off-road focused. And then you have the Mustang Mach-E, which is changing things because it's a pure electric car. Ford's first nationally available pure electric vehicle, too.
Right.
Yeah.
I think in this case, of the three categories, I think the truck winner, the F-150, and the utility winner, the Mach-E, Mustang Mach-E, those are the no-brainers in my book. Those seem like pretty clear victors. With the Mach-E, it's such a game-changing vehicle, a provocative...
polarizing.
Polarizing, yes, but honestly, I think the controversy about the Mustang name has gone exactly how I expected it would, and it's just when Dodge named that four-door sedan in 2005 the Charger, traditionalists were upset for like 6 months and then everybody said fine. And I think that's exactly what's happened here. And in retrospect, I think it was total genius and a gut for Ford to do that and to link it so overtly to the Mustang heritage, because let's not forget the Mustang is basically Ford's only remaining traditional passenger vehicle right now. And its future, I hope, and pray is secure and solid and will continue long into the future. But Ford understands that they can't just keep selling nostalgia and heritage with that car. And they've got plans for hybrid Mustangs. And I wouldn't be surprised to see pure EV, regular bodied Mustangs in the future, too. So I applaud Ford for having an eye toward the future and tailoring their new products accordingly.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the fraud of the Mach-E, but you got to that point in that it is not a Mustang, but who cares? But it is a four-door vehicle. It does have a hatchback. It's really a crossover, or is it? And this is the second part of that fraud. If you're going to sell an electric vehicle, you kind of need it to be a crossover these days because that's where the buyers are anyway. And if you want people to use it for something besides just being a weird, miserly green person, then you've got to hit a market where people actually buy cars. But the other part of this is it's not really a crossover. And I saw someone point this out somewhere in social media where I get all my information. But the Mach-E has a ground clearance of 5.7 inches,
right,
which is less than most regular sedans. This is not really a crossover. And if you look at it in profile, it looks an awful lot like a Tesla.
Well, it's not an SUV, but I mean, and this is like the old argument I think everybody in the industry has. You know, is there a difference between a crossover and an SUV? And what is a crossover, you know, as opposed to an SUV? So it's definitely not a sport utility vehicle per se, but I think it could be a crossover because most crossovers are built on car platforms.
Whatever it is, though, it does make use of a high roof. And I did check. Its cargo space numbers are good. It should be roomy in the front and rear row. So if you're crossover shopping, this is probably going to work for you just fine. But this is the way the Ford Escape works, too. That is a very low-sitting vehicle that doesn't look that much like a crossover anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and it's did you guys see it last year at the Chicago Auto Show at the because they do like the days before the auto show opens.
I took a quick lap in it. Our garage. I was able to do a quick lap in it, which is basically, you know, you get to 20 miles an hour indoor. But it was cool. Even
That's
that
really
kind of
cool.
gave a neat taste of what it's going to be.
I know it's going to be in Chicago soon. So I'm hoping we'll all have the chance to check it out firsthand. Because, I mean, there's just so much there that's really cool. And I think you're right. It is changing the game, changing the platform of what we are looking forward to. And Tom was 100% right that, you know, if you're going to do something like this, we need to put it in the crossover segment. So I think you're right. I think it's 100% the only vehicle that could have been chosen for that.
So congratulations to the Hyundai Genesis, the Ford F-150.
Hyundai, and
the
Hyundai Elantra.
Hyundai Elantra. What did I say?
You Hyundai said Genesis. Hyundai Genesis.
No, what is that? That hasn't been a car for years.
It's been, that was a previous coupe and sedan.
It wasn't a car.
Genesis on the brain.
Yeah.
All right. Well, the Hyundai Elantra then, the Ford F-150
yes.
and the Ford Mustang Mach-E. Congratulations to those vehicles. We'll probably be talking a lot more about them in the future. We're going to take a break right now. When we come back, we're going to talk to Nissan's Jonathan Buehler about all sorts of cool Nissan stuff. You don't want to miss this conversation.
Welcome back to the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast, and I am Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. Thanks for sticking around. Hey, this is the time of the show, and if you're a regular listener, you know this, that I highly recommend that you follow me on Twitter. I am Car Guy Tom. That is car_guy_Tom on Twitter. If you see a fun, cool, old, or rare car, use the Car Spotter hashtag, and I will share that car with my friends and followers. All right. He's a 9-year Nissan veteran. He is currently the brand's communication manager for sports cars and sedans, and he helps curate the North American Nissan Heritage Collection. If that's not enough, he currently owns a Datsun 73240Z. He hails from Arrington, Tennessee. Welcome to the podcast, Jonathan Buehler.
Thank you so much.
Well, thanks. Where are you calling from, the office today, or are you at home?
Working from home.
Like so many of us.
Yeah, exactly.
So Jonathan, tell us about the Heritage Collection. This sounds really interesting. And apparently there are two versions of the Heritage Collection, one in Japan and one here in the U.S. But you are curator, so you are responsible for what is seen and shown there. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So as a curator myself, we have a manager who also manages and oversees the overall direction of the Heritage Collection here in the U.S. But my responsibility, along with some of the other volunteers that we have in the group, is to maintain and restore our classic heritage vehicles from not only here in the U.S. but from other territories as well that we've kind of gathered over the last several years. So it's been an absolute blast. To go out and spend time with these vehicles, you know, drive them, keep them up, but then also source and find new vehicles. So, we have a great time volunteering our time, making sure that we, you know, keep our heritage alive within the U.S. here.
Yeah, and that is an important part. I would imagine, like, the past vehicles serve as design inspiration for the new ones that your engineers and designers are working on, I would imagine, especially in the case of the Z cars. How many of the vehicles in the collection were vehicles that Nissan always hung on to, and how many are the vehicles, like you said, where they are vehicles that were sold new and kind of went through a normal life cycle with regular owners and are now in the vintage vehicle market, and now that Nissan has gone out and reacquired or purchased those vehicles from private owners? What kind of mix is that?
Yeah, surprisingly, we have quite a few vehicles that have been in the collection since the very beginning of their production. So we've got probably about 40 to 45% of original vehicles, and some of these, we've had since the early 1960s. So it's really unique, you know, to see those vehicles in their pristine condition with very low miles. But on the flip side, though, you know, the other 55% are vehicles though that have been well maintained and kept by owners who really appreciated them. To the point where we really haven't had to do much. But there are the rare occasions where we do have, you know, those really hard-to-find vehicles that we, you know, have to spend the time to really massage and restore to ensure that we keep, you know, that particular model line living. So, for example, we've got a 1934 Type 15 Roadster. I mean, we're talking about one of the very first vehicles from Nissan ever. And so sourcing this vehicle out and restoring it has been kind of a pride and joy from some of those who have volunteered their time. And one of the previous managers of the collection spent a lot of time with it. So, you've got a lot of these special vehicles that we hold on to. But at the same time, though, you know, we're always looking for new models to add to the collection to ensure that, you know, we don't forget those models in the future.
Yeah. So what is the newest vehicle included in the North American Heritage Collection?
Newest vehicle. So we're currently working this out, but we're trying to get one of the 50th anniversary Zs into the collection because that's a big deal. We've got every generation of Z in our collection, including a 40th anniversary. So it would only be fitting for us to add that 50th anniversary from the 2020 model year. So. We're working on getting one of those into the collection just to ensure we keep the Z heritage alive.
And is the Heritage Collection consist primarily or entirely of production vehicles, or are there past concepts that are included as well, or are those kind of handled separately?
No, actually, the collection is all encompassing. So we've got concept vehicles from the 80s and 90s. And then we also have a really well put together group of vintage race cars from the past, especially my personal favorite, the BRE 46 510 that John Morton drove.
I was gonna ask you about that one. I was in my wife lives in or grew up in Southern California, and I used to go to the Cars and Coffee gatherings, those early morning Saturday cruises. And I was lucky enough to go to one of those where the Pete Brock BRE John Morton 510 was there, and it was kind of a religious experience standing next to
it. Yeah, I tell you, yeah, and it's actually going through a process of you know, getting not so much restored, but you know, bringing it back up to its former glory. So it's currently going through that, and every time you know you just approach the vehicle, it just sends shivers down your back just because. It's such, you know, an iconic vehicle for Nissan in the U.S., but just also knowing, you know, what it did during that time frame, you know, bringing in an affordable car that anyone who went to the racetrack could go to the dealership and buy and race if they wanted to was just really unique and such a special car. That and the 240Z, you know, yes. Having both of those vehicles with the racing pedigree definitely makes them, you know, iconic in the Nissan brand lineup.
For sure. And I have to say, in my book, the BRE Datsun's arguably best race car livery ever, the gorgeous like red, white, and blue paint scheme. And the thing that really struck me about standing next to that original BRE race car is when you get right up close to it, you can see that all that livery paintwork on the car, the numbers on the roof and the doors, you can see the brush strokes. That's all hand painted stuff, which was a real trip to see. There's no vinyl there.
Yeah, it's absolutely beautiful. Yeah, all hand painted.
Yeah. So Jonathan, I wanted to talk a little bit about the 240Z, and especially in terms of the heritage, because it's a fascinating car, and you don't always associate, or I don't always associate, Asian car brands with heritage or history or iconic vehicles from their past. But the 240 is such a strong presence in the American car canon. And one of the interesting things about it is that, you know, Chevy's got the Corvette and Ford's got the Mustang and Jeep's got the Wrangler. There's not a lot of other cars that really linger or I think have this sort of presence. And when the 240Z came out, it was very much a unique vehicle. Correct me if I'm wrong, in that unlike American cars at the time, say the Camaro or the Firebird, it didn't rely on a big V8. And unlike British cars at the time, it was roomy enough for an adult and it was reliable.
important consideration, yes.
Roomy and comfortable.
240Z and what it meant to Nissan and where you guys are going with this. I should say Datsun, because that's what we're talking about in 1970.
Yeah, I mean, the 240Z is a beacon and an icon for the brand just for those reasons. I mean, it really stood out in the early 70s as kind of, a car that was obtainable. You know, you think back in the day, you know, Corvettes and a lot of these Ferraris and Porsches, you know, they were aspirational, but, you know, whether or not you could actually go to the dealership and buy one would be questionable. But you could go to a Datsun dealership and obtain, you know, a beautiful 240Z with its, you know, its ties to vintage Ferraris and vintage, Jaguars. You know, you could have that look, that European look, but then also get the Japanese reliability. You know, that inline six was bulletproof, and I can attest to that with my own 240, mm-hmm. but I mean, at the end of the day, you know, you had this attainable car that provided thrills, performance, and really put a smile on anyone who drove its, you know, face. And we have continued that through every single generation of Z from the early 1970s. And with the new generation that we look to bring to market, you know, as indicated with our Z Proto, you know, we're maintaining that DNA and that essence of Z-ness that will continue to live on from now until whenever. So yeah, the Z is really a brand icon for us. It's an ambassador. The community surrounding Z has been absolutely amazing, and we want to keep the enthusiasm alive.
Yeah. So talk about the Z and how it played a part in Datsun and then eventually Nissan's growth in the United States, because the car did morph. It was really a pure sports car for the first generation, and then it became something of a grand touring car with an awful lot of power, because by the late 70s, early 80s, when the 280Z X Turbo came out, it was really challenging the Corvette in terms of acceleration, but it was also more of a grand touring car.
Yeah, yeah. So, directionally speaking, you know, you've got to appeal to the times, and you know, the 1980s and 90s. You know, you wanted to have that luxurious feel to stay relevant within the market, but at the same time, though, you know, not go away from the DNA that exists within the Z. So the performance was there, and that was first and foremost, you know, for every generation of Z, as one of the, you know, the key attributes to the vehicle overall. It's got to have the performance, you know, and as you were saying, the 280ZX turbo car, the Z31, you know, generation of 300ZX, and then leading into the Z32 300ZX, with a twin turbo V6 making over 300 horsepower, you know, yeah, being one of the quickest cars in the time, you know, there in the early 90s. I mean, performance was always, you know, that key factor that had to be in the Z. But as you mentioned, luxury really had to kind of step up and play a role. So, I mean, I always look back at the commercials from the 1980s and 90s, especially black gold for the 280ZX.
I love
showcasing
that car.
I know that it's we actually have that car from the commercial in our heritage collection. And every time I sit in it, I just have to rethink, you know, having a mustache and, you know, a pretty lady in the passenger seat. You know, it just really comes full circle. they showcase not only the performance aspect of the Z, but all of the luxurious features that came along with it. And then that's played a key role as we've gone forward. Is, you know, the Z provides a balance of performance, luxury, but then also a balance of providing, you know, a space for a driver to feel like they're a driver. I feel like every Z that I've driven, I've always had this visceral feeling in it. Even though, you know, I can be surrounded by nice appointments, you know, beautiful screens or nice lush interior. But at the end of the day, though, these Zs have always provided that level of experience that you really can't get in very many other cars.
You know, I'm scrolling through a little Nissan Z car history, and you know, like we've been talking about, it's really a trip to see how it's changed over the years to keep pace with the times. And yeah, when you get to that 280 ZX, the late 70s, there is that disco vibe going on. And then as we roll into the 80s, it is that pivot toward still maintaining the luxury end of it, but a very high tech, you know, digital feel as well. And when the fifth generation, when the 350Z launched, which, man, I remember that. That's already, it's already been almost 20 years ago, 2002. That was really an overtly heritage and retro styled vehicle that kind of got back to the Z car's roots in a very real way. So, and then the 370Z kind of continued in that vein. So I'm guessing you can't even say for sure that it is in fact going to be called 400Z, but we know the next generation is just around the corner. How do you see the role of the Z car evolving? Because we've seen sports cars, let's be frank, it's a shrinking market and there aren't as many around as they used to be, and it's much tougher to be profitable. So in a lot of ways that benefits those players who are still holding true to that traditional, you know, front engine, rear drive sports car, fun to drive market. So how do you see with the new generation Z right around the corner, how do you see the role of the new car? How has it evolved and how does it fit into Nissan's plans now?
Yeah, well, I mean, sticking to the, you know, the tried and true recipe that Z's existed since the 70s, I mean, the evolution of it has changed, as we've mentioned, with the times. And yeah, you know, with the shrinking market, you know, the Z's relevancy is in question. But at the end of the day, though, you know, it's still a huge part of our brand, our identity, and our DNA as a whole, as a company. So the Z is just astronomically important for us to not only maintain for you know, our enthusiasts and our customer base who already exist now, but also to draw in more of those folks who want to have a sports car that provides them with the performance and the agility, but at the same time, though, is affordable. There's a lot of sports cars in market right now that we see that are, you know, on the higher end of most people's budgets. And and what we anticipate with this new car is again, that same recipe of attainability, allowing these customers to have something with everything that they want. And this new Z Proto, and, you know, kind of shows off, you know, what our intention is going to be with our next generation Z, with, you know, a really nice appointed interior with all the technology that you would expect from a car in 2021, 2022. But at the same time, though, a design, though, that provides, you know, a heritage and, you know, that calls back to what you'd expect from the 240Z and 300ZX. And this evolution of bringing back the heritage is much like what we did with the 350Z, but on a much broader scale, to the point where we're really trying to reach a customer base that wants something you know, that they can't obtain without spending a lot of money. So this new generation Z is going to provide everything that they'll want for a price that they can really afford, and at the end of the day, enjoy every single time they get in it.
Jonathan, we're running out of time here, but we can't end this conversation without talking about your insanely cool car. Just tell us a little bit about your personal Z.
Yeah, it's got a really cool story, so thank you for asking. Yeah, my dad actually purchased the Z that I shared with you guys, that I'm that I'm lucky enough to drive. He purchased that car from the first owner in California back in 1979. And she was, you know, it's the little old lady story where she drove and she just parked it. So he finally, you know, asked the lady if she would sell it, and she sold it to him. And he drove it from 1979 up until 1998 as a daily. Now, wow. In between there, though, he was in the military, and he was stationed in the Philippines where he met my mother. So the car sat here in the U.S. for many years. But then when he came back, he fixed it up and drove it until 98. And then real quick, I mean, in 2005, I received it as a birthday present. As kind of a, hey, you can do with it as you want. Now, mind you, this car was in complete shambles. It was in really bad need of a restoration, but I was really looking at other cars, you know, vintage cars, because I just have a love for old cars. And I couldn't find something that I could settle on, but this Z was just always sitting in the garage, and I just knew, why don't we do this together? So me and my dad restored it together over a four-year period. I drove it to high school, brought it up to Tennessee for school, and I've been driving it ever since and changing it up with different iterations of engines and suspension and whatnot, and now I found the perfect recipe for it, and it's an absolute blast to drive.
Well, it's flat out gorgeous, yeah. And I'm just going to describe this. And if it's okay with you, Jonathan, we're going to share pictures of this on our Facebook page.
Please, by all means.
Yeah, but it's sort of a bronze orange. This is actually a Nissan color, is it not?
It is. It's the Le Mans Sunset Orange from the 350Z.
Oh, man, but you've got the Japanese thin bumper on it, a Japanese license plate. And what are those wheels with the huge offset? Those are awesome.
Yeah, so those are Watanabe from Japan. I've always wanted those wheels, and I finally got a chance to get them. But, yeah, the offsets are extremely low. That's why, you know, it's got a really unique stance. So I was just trying to pay homage to the Japanese culture with kind of the wider wheels with a little bit of the stretch on the tires, but don't let that fool you. That sticky rubber really puts this car on the ground. So,
well, Jonathan, we're out of time. Tell us real quick, how can people learn more about the Nissan Heritage Collection?
Yeah, so we've got a Heritage Collection page on our NissanUSA.com website. So you can definitely check that out. And then just keep a lookout on our social media pages for any heritage-related things that we do. So we'll definitely try to announce when we'll be taking some of the cars to our local Cars and Coffee events, as well as other events that we'll do in collaboration with the Lane Motor Museum. So just be on the lookout on our social channels.
Excellent. Thank you. Jonathan, thank you for your time today.
No, thank you, guys. It was an absolute pleasure. So really appreciate it.
Appreciate it. All right. That was Jonathan Mueller with Nissan. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, it's quiz time. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast, and I am Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive, and I'm grateful you're still with us. Hey, Jill.
Hey, yeah.
Jill, you're active on Sassy Note. How can the kids follow you there?
Ooh, Sassy Note. I am sassy in my notes. Yes, Twitter. I'm actually Twitter, TikTok, Instagram. You can find me on that, as well as Sassy Note at Jill Ciminiello. So JILLCIMINILLO for sassy tweets.
All right. Damon, you're a sasser. What's the deal?
Sassy Note sounds like that. Isn't that what 12 and 13-year-old girls passed around in study hall? folded in those very intricate ways, piece of notebook paper that was shaped like a, I don't know, football or whatever.
Do you like Tom? Check one.
Exactly. Yes or no?
No. What's wrong with you?
No, absolutely no. What are you crazy? No, I am not a sassy noter, but I am on Twitter at Damon Bell Likes Cars.
Perfect. All right. It is quiz time, kids. I just want to remind everyone that the 2021 quiz tally is as follows. Damon 1, Jill 0.
We're keeping track this year?
Yeah. Along with the total points, I believe he said.
Total points and bonus questions. So
that's what I was just going to ask. Are we going to break out the bonus questions?
We are. So we're going to start, Damon. The topic today is the Mustang Mach-E. I hope you're ready.
Oh, boy. Mm. Somehow I think I'm going to be embarrassed by the gaps in my knowledge here, but go ahead.
All right. First question goes to Damon. Damon, which of the following is not a 2021 Mustang Mach-E trim level? Select, California Route 1, GT, or Dynamic?
Oh, God, really? Could it possibly be California to Route 1? You throw in these. I'm going to say California Route 1, even though I'll probably be burned by that.
Jill, same question to you. Mustang Mach-E, that is Ford's all-new electric crossover. Which is the fake trim level? Select, California Route 1, GT, or Dynamic?
If I recall correctly, I think the California one is one. It's just peculiar enough to be there, so I'm going to go with Dynamic.
Jill, good reasoning. Jill gets a point.
Drat.
I mean, that's just a weird name.
I hate it.
It is. I should have not gone with that, because if you rewind the tape, you'll notice I'm sure I'm wrong, but I'm going to say this anyway. So yep. I predicted my own incorrectness.
All right, Jill, next question goes to you. Jill, what is the highest capacity battery available in the Mustang Mach-E? Is it 70 kilowatt hours, 88 kilowatt hours, 101 kilowatt hours, or 300 kilowatt hours?
I'm going to go with not 300 kilowatt hours. I don't think it's 101 either. So 88 seems like a weird number. I'm going with 70.
All right. All right. Damon, same question to you. 70, 88, 101, or 300?
Tell me, what is the preface question? What is
the highest capacity battery in the Mustang Mach-E?
I'm sorry, read them again.
70, 88, 101, or 300.
And what did Jill say?
She said 70.
I'm going to say 101.
You guys are both wrong. The big battery is the 88 kilowatt hour battery, and the little battery is a 66 kilowatt hour battery. No points for anybody. Which of the following is not a 2021 Mustang Mach-E color? Are you ready?
Oh.
Yes.
Rapid red, shadow black, iconic silver, or organic green?
I will say iconic silver.
All right. Jill, same question to you. Rapid red, shadow black, iconic silver, or organic green?
I kind of want to go with organic green, because who would use the word organic in a paint color? But then it's an electric vehicle. An electric vehicle, which, you know, that may be a reason to use it, but I'm going with it anyway. Organic green.
Jill, you're correct.
Good logic.
Wow. 2-1 in favor of Jill.
Oh.
With two questions to go, Damon, you've got a lot of work to pull this one out.
Not feeling good about it. You've uncovered a weak spot here.
All right. Jill, this question goes to you. Jill, what is the base price of a 2021 Mustang Mach-E? This includes destination. Is it $39,995, $43,995, $45,995, or $49,995?
Oh, man. Base. I wrote this story like a year and a half ago. My memory is not that good. Could you just read through it one more time?
Sure. 39,995, 43, 45, or 49?
I'm going to go with 45.
Okay. Damon, same question to you.
I will go with the 43 number.
43,995.
Before you give the answer, I want to say my gut reaction was to say 39, but I went higher. So I'm sticking with my 45, but I would like to know what the answer is.
Joe, I'd like you to know that your impulsive answer and your gut reaction answer are both wrong.
Oh, good.
Damon, 43,995 is correct.
Ah!
Damon's on the board.
Woohoo!
All right.
Last question in the regular question round. Damon, is the 2021 Mustang Mach-E front-wheel drive or rear-wheel drive?
I believe you can get all-wheel drive, but its basic layout is rear-wheel drive.
Jill, same question to you.
Definitely all-wheel drive is available.
It is.
Oh, gosh. I want to say rear-wheel drive because that makes sense, because Mustang, but I feel like it's kind of a funky answer. I'm going to say front.
Damon ties it.
Two to two,
and we roll into the final question. Yeah, a lot of these EVs now are going to be rear drive, including the Volkswagen ID.4.
Yeah.
Which is kind of interesting.
Yeah,
but the layout just serves them well.
Yeah. Huh.
All right, Damon, the bonus question goes to you first. I hope you're ready.
I am.
All right, Damon. Damon, finally, which one of the following characters is not one of the Teletubbies?
That's no fair. He has kids. He might actually know this.
I think the window Teletubbies is already passed. And
all right, Damon.
Very thankful that I did not have kids when Teletubbies was a thing.
Your choices are Tinky Winky, Dipsy, Lala, and Sun Ra.
I'm going to say Sun Ra.
Sun Ra. Jill, question to you.
I actually want to say Sun Ra as well.
You're both going to say Sun Ra?
Well, because it's either that or it's Lala, because I'm pretty sure Dipsy and Tinky Winky. I think Tinky Winky might even be the purple one.
Yeah, that was the controversial one.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the first two are real. But, I mean, Sun Ra, I mean, that sounds like some kind of a...
What does it sound like?
A mummy, like it's something that you would see in the mummy movies, Sun Ra.
Well, you're both correct. Sun Ra is not a Teletubby.
I would imagine you have albums by Sun Ra.
I do. Sun Ra is a jazz guy. He died in 1993. He was the band leader of the incredibly bizarre and actually wonderful Solar Orchestra. And Sun Ra never ate tubby custard.
Wait, so Sun Ra is actually a real thing?
He's a real guy. He's a guy.
Yeah. Recording artist.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Right, I was going with the mummy, but okay.
All right, we got about 5 minutes left here. Damon, what's going on at the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Pod? Not the podcast. We're doing the podcast.
What's going on?
The CG Daily Drive blog.
Got some good reviews this week. We've got, speaking of Mustangs, we've got a test drive review of the Mustang EcoBoost, the current gen Mustang EcoBoost, and that is the base Mustang engine now, and what a fabulous vehicle. There are the quote unquote secretary Mustang is a thing of the past, because the base engine in a Mustang now is a 310 horsepower turbocharged four cylinder that, when you pair it with a 6-speed manual transmission, fully fulfills that enthusiast car mission of Mustang. So we got a full road test of that. Great car. We've also got, just put this up recently, the 2021 Jeep Gladiator with the EcoDiesel engine.
Yeah.
And speaking of colors, we've got a 2021 Chevrolet Trailblazer RS in a very striking color called Oasis Blue that to me looks like the spitting image of 57 Chevy Tropical Turquoise. And then finally, we've got, there's a gallery article on the 10 worst gas guzzling vehicles of 1994 as tested by Consumer Guide. And then also something that we'll probably want to spend a little bit of time on, and that's a quick post about General Motors unveiling a brand new logo, a new GM logo for the company.
The logo thing is interesting because General Motors, this is not my father's General Motors. I still remember a time, not that long ago, when there were five different models called Cutlass available. Mm-hmm. General Motors.
And they all sold in six figures.
Yeah, yeah, they sold huge. But now you've got a company that's kind of kicking it. Again, all this stuff has yet to arrive, but we've got the Hummer. We've got the Cadillac Celestique, which is their all-new premium electric sedan, a flying Cadillac that was just introduced at CES. This is the General Motors recall, but to kind of break the ice, or not to break the ice, what am I trying to say here, but try to break with the past, they've gone with an all-new logo. It's controversial. I posted a picture of the logo on the Collectible Automobile Facebook page, and every single person there hated it, which means that they're at least...
Mission accomplished.
Right.
Jill and I were just talking off air about how I kind of feel like a new logo should in some ways be the same thing as a new car design or a new vehicle design. The first time you see it, if you're 100% comfortable with it, that's probably a bad thing because it can push the envelope a little bit.
Yeah, I don't not like it. But the editor in me, however, is slightly bothered by the lowercase letters. I'll be curious to see how well that ages. Because right now it's a trend to use lowercase, even though I'm going to point out E.E. Cummings did it first. But I like the color gradient. I mean, I think that they were different enough without being completely crazy. Because another automaker that launched a new logo this week was Kia. And to me, like, the new Kia logo is, it looks like KN. So I think General Motors, at least, they have like the look to the future with the nod to the past.
Yeah, and what they're doing too is they're trying to appear like a tech company and not an old brick and mortar car company. And I think mission accomplished. All right, kids, we are completely out of time, but thank you both. Special thanks to our guest today, Jonathan Bueller. As always, thanks to Jill Seminillo and Damon Bell. Special thanks to producer Paul and the good folks here at WCPT AM 820. You won't know this in the final cut, but I made all sorts of mistakes today that Paul had to fix. Special thanks to my radio mentor, Steve and Johnny. As always, you can reach out to us at carstuff@consumerguide.com. That is carstuff@consumerguide.com. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. Let's talk more about cars again next week.